But there's something about home, right? There's why they say, I want to be home for Christmas. There's something about going home, at least for most of us. And I understand that home for everybody isn't always a great idea. But for most of us, the concept of home is something that we long for. Some of you have traveled miles to be home for Christmas, or you've done it in the past, and you're looking forward to being together in a place that you know and that you feel comfortable, that has memories wrapped up in it with us. And there's something that has come to my mind as I've been thinking about this concept of home, that home is both residence and relationship. Home is both residence and relationship. There's something about home that makes it feel like home. And I think it's because of what's there and who's there are both important. Home is a place, right? When you walk into your front door, especially now, perhaps it's decorated for Christmas of your apartment or your condo or your home, you know, what do you see? Do you see a tree decorated? Do you see presents under there? Are there going to be tomorrow, perhaps? You see other decorations? You see perhaps the makings for a dinner or food that's going to be eaten tonight or tomorrow? There's some things about it that when you walk in, hopefully you feel comfortable. You feel, we even use this phrase, you feel at home. There's something in us that longs for that kind of a feeling. But it's a place, but it's not just a place. You see, home is also about relationships. And think about the relationships that you've experienced within your home, maybe with a spouse, with children, with parents, with grandparents, with extended family, with friends, with neighbors, the people who have walked through your door and have spent time with you. Many of those you cherish, and they're relationships perhaps that you've had for many years, and you value them highly, and it's a part of what makes home feel like home, as you sit around in that the room where you sit, and you enjoy perhaps some food together, and just relax and talk with one another. Perhaps in your home that's decorated for Christmas, on your tree, you have ornaments that you've made when you were a kid, or your kids made when they were young, and that makes your tree unique, and it's a sign of the relationships that have been in place. Most likely, the gifts that you have under your tree are going to have names on them, names of people that you know and love and that love you. Perhaps even you have a nativity scene that is special to you for some reason, maybe even a family member. I know in our home growing up, my sister took a pottery class one time and made a nativity set and hand-painted it. This thing was amazing. I don't have a picture of it. She gave it to my parents, and I think she has it now. My parents are both in heaven. But when she gave it to them, I remember I had no idea that she had made this. It was like that good. And I thought she bought it somewhere. But then she told me, no, I made this. And I realized that I said the wrong thing. But that's what family does, right? But there's a sense in which that became a special part of Christmas. That's a part of what made it feel like home. And maybe you have something like that even in your home now. As we grow older, we usually leave home at some point, right? That's usually the way that it works. And yet home is often a place that we want to go back to. We want to go back home to a place that feels like home. We even talk about the fact we've gone on a long trip, right? When we come home, we walk in the door. Ah, it's good to be home. I can't wait to sleep in my own bed. There's things about it that just make it a place that we often want to be. But do you remember the first time that you left home, or parents perhaps remember the first time that your kids left home? I mean, let's go all the way back to the first sleepover, right? At grandparents or a friend's house, and either you had your first sleepover there. I mean, come on, be honest. How many of you didn't make it through that first night? You called your parents and they had to come pick you up because you were crying and you wanted to go home, right? There's something about being home. Being somewhere else was perhaps scary to you. Some of you were the parent who got the phone call who was thinking you were going to get a night without your child and now had to go get in the car and go pick them up from wherever they were, right? Leaving home can be difficult. Think about that first day of kindergarten, especially for parents, perhaps, when you put your little one on the bus or when they got out of your car at the school for the very first time. Now, maybe they hopped out and they were happy to go up the steps of the bus and get in there. Maybe they were clinging to your leg, screaming, no, no, don't do this, you know? They were probably different in how they responded, but how did you respond? I bet you some of you had a tear in your eye and you were trying not to show your child as they walked away for the first time. And you realized that something had changed, right? The times of them being at home, maybe you celebrated that. I don't know, probably for a part you did. But at the same time, there's something about seeing our kids go off that is sometimes difficult. Remember first semester at college or moving into your first apartment? I went to a college that's about 2 hours from here, and so it was certainly close enough to get home for visits, which was great. But I do remember being dropped off. Your parents are there dropping you off. You kind of move in, and then they leave, and you're sitting in your dorm room, and you're like, okay, here we are. I don't really know anybody or hardly anybody, and I don't really know this place, but this is where I'm going to call home for now. And you have to make that adjustment. And as much as you try, it still doesn't really feel like home. Or maybe as a parent, you remember taking your child to college. I had that experience a year and a half ago. One of my kids chose to go to school in Phoenix, Arizona. Yes, Phoenix, Arizona. So we flew out there. My son and I flew out there with her, and we got a rental car and got all the stuff she needed, set her up in her room. And finally, the time came that we had to leave. And I remember sitting in the rental car, the three of us, and we knew we had to head to the airport to get on a plane to fly home. And I wanted to pray with her before we left. And I tried multiple times to do that, but couldn't seem to talk. I don't know what happened to me in that moment. And we made it through, and she got out of the car and started walking towards her dorm. And I'd already told her, don't look back, because I can't take it. And I remember driving to the airport and getting on a plane, and I just knew life had changed. It was the first child that I'd had that really had gone away to college. And that feeling of, you know, wanting them home and that adjustment that takes place. Some people leave home when they don't really want to. I think of those serving in the military, and I recognize that when they sign up to serve, they do it understanding that there's probably going to be times where they're going to be away from home. It kind of comes with the territory. That doesn't necessarily make it easy. There's a family connected to our church whose young man was just deployed in October. His wife and two young kids that he had to leave to go to another country for a period of time. It was actually pretty cool to hear about what happened. The neighborhood heard that he'd been deployed, and so it was a couple of weeks before Halloween, and so enable their kids to do Halloween with their dad. The whole neighborhood did Halloween early, and the kids all walked around in their costumes and got their candy. Well, then that started the idea, well, let's do Thanksgiving, and let's do Christmas, and let's do 4th of July, and they had all these holidays in like 2 weeks. I mean, I don't know if they did the whole fireworks thing too, but it's pretty cool to see what happened, just to say we love you and we appreciate what you're doing to go and to serve us and to serve our country. But in the end, he still had to go. He had to leave home. Others also leave their home when they don't choose to. God has allowed us the opportunity as a church to come alongside two families from the Ukraine in the past couple of months who have had to leave their home because it wasn't safe there, because there was war going on in their country. And they didn't want to leave, hearing their story and listening to them and recount what they've been through and how they got here. And again, very thankful for all that has been done for them here in the United States and by our church in particular. But at the same time, if you ask them, they would rather be home. They'd rather be back in their homes in the Ukraine where they have family who have stayed or things that they know and places that are familiar, a language that they speak a little bit more easily. And so there are often many reasons why we may leave home. But it's interesting to me that the Christmas story is about Jesus leaving his home to come to ours. And as I said to the kids, when we think about it that way, Jesus leaving his home means he left a place of perfection, perfect beauty, perfect relationship. And he left that to come to us, to come to this earth that is filled with brokenness and pain. Yes, good things too. But we know there's a lot of stuff that goes on down here. And he chose to do that. John was one of Jesus' closest friends. And he described Jesus as the Word, meaning God's message to us of who he is and how we can be with him. And John said this, the Word, meaning Jesus, became flesh and made his dwelling among us. Jesus became one of us and came to live with us, to make his home with us. To communicate with us as clearly as possible, he became one of us. In Jesus, we get to see what God is like. The whole idea of Emmanuel, God with us, is fulfilled in Jesus. And this is the point that I'd like you to walk away from tonight, if you could. It's this: Jesus left his home and came to make his home with us so that we can be at home with him. Jesus left his home, came to make his home with us. Why? So that we could be at home with him. And that involved both place, residence, and relationship, as we're going to see. Now, Jesus loved to tell stories, and one of the stories that he told, perhaps one of the more well-known ones, was about a father and his two sons, particularly about a young man who left home. You can read it in Luke chapter 15 of the Bible. I would encourage you to do so on your own sometime. But his father had two sons, and the younger one comes to him one day and asks for his inheritance. Basically, he's saying, I want my money now. I don't want to wait. It's like saying to his dad, I wish you were dead. Think about that for a moment. Was there value of relationship? No, what he valued was what his father had, not the relationship that he had with his father. Now, as I hear that, to me, the story could easily end here because a dad, I would have a very clear response. No, right? It's a ridiculous request. It's actually presumptuous. It's selfish. No, we're not going to do that. But in the story that Jesus told, the father decides to go ahead. And so he must have liquidated whatever assets he had to give his younger son his share of the inheritance. And Jesus says the son leaves home and he set off for a distant land. It's like he wanted to get far away from home, far from responsibilities, restraints, and yes, even relationships that he'd had. He's finally on his own. And at first, it's great. He's the high roller at the casino tables. He's the one buying everyone around at the bar. He was living large until the money ran out. At the same time, there was a severe famine in the land. We might refer to it as a downturn in the economy or even a recession that was going on. Times were hard, so hard that the only work he could find was feeding a farmer's pigs. Imagine a good Jewish boy feeding pigs. In that time, it showed the desperation of where he was at. He was so hungry that even the pig's food began to look good to him. And if you've ever seen pigs be fed, that's quite a statement. And we are told that no one gave him anything. Nobody helped him out. Not the friends he had when he had money. They had all disappeared. No one would help. He was literally left on his own. Now, this could be the end of the story. And for many of us, we could understand that because there's some great moral lessons to this story, right? We don't even need to go any further. Don't disrespect your family. Don't be greedy. Don't waste your resources. Choose your friends carefully. There's plenty of lessons that we can learn from what this young man has experienced, and they are all worth heeding. But that's not the main point of this story. And so the story goes on because the story isn't so much about the son as it is about the father. And so the story continues. Jesus says, when he came to his senses. Another way of saying that is when he realized how wrong he had been. I think all of us in some point in our lives have gone down a road where we went down it because it felt good or seemed good for us, but there was a little voice in the back of our head or maybe other people telling us that's not a good road to go down, that's not going to lead to good places, and yet we head down it, right? And for a time, it might have been fun and enjoyable, but all of a sudden that runs out, and all of a sudden it's not what we thought it was going to be, and we find ourselves in a situation perhaps we never thought we were going to be in. And this little voice speaks louder and louder. And we finally get to a point where we're willing to say, I was wrong. And see, when we get to that point in our lives, we're finally ready for a change. Perhaps you have been in a situation or you know people who are still going down that road and you try to help them, but they're not going to be helped because they haven't got to the point of saying, I was wrong. I need to change. And that's when change can really take place. He finally gets to that point, and he thinks about home and all that he's left. He gets an idea. He can't go back to his father as a son. He doesn't deserve that opportunity. After all, he had basically said he wished his father was dead. So that relationship has got to be done, right? He had completely devalued and rejected that relationship with his dad. But maybe he could return, he reasoned, not as a son, but as a servant in the story. At least he would have food to eat because he knew his dad treated his servants well. So food to eat, a roof over his head, certainly better than the situation that he's in now. So he heads for home and he prepares his speech. And it goes like this. I paraphrase, Father, I was wrong. I messed up. I know I'm not worthy to be called your son, but I was wondering if I could be as one of your servants. So he heads home, and as he's traveling, for us as listeners to the story, there's a lingering question, and the question is this: what is the father's response going to be? How is dad going to respond when his son comes home? Will it be outright rejection? What are you doing here? What are you thinking? Get out of here. You're no longer my son. I don't ever want to see you again. Will it be anger? Will it be at least a lecture? I mean, come on. For those of us who have been right and someone else is wrong, doesn't that give us the right to lecture them? That's how it works, right? Many of us think that way. At least he needs to get a talking to. But Jesus says this. But while he was still a long way off, he was off in the distance, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to him, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. Notice first, the father was looking. Though the son had rejected his relationship with his dad, the father still valued a relationship with his son. And picture him day after day looking at the hill as the road comes up over the hill. And everyone who comes across, is that him? Is that him? He's waiting for his son to come home. So he responds not with judgment, but with compassion. He ran to him. For someone of his age to run in that culture was considered undignified. A man of his position, often because of the clothing that they wore, they wouldn't run. And so for him to run, that would have drawn attention. What is he running? What is so important that he would be undignified and he would run? His son. He runs towards his son. And when he gets there, he throws his arms around him and he kisses him. His son hasn't said anything yet. He hasn't said, I'm sorry. He hasn't even said, I was wrong yet. But he's received literally with open arms. A kiss was a common family greeting, as it is in many other cultures today. It's one that he would not give to one of his servants. You wouldn't kiss your servant in greeting, but you would kiss a family member. And that's exactly what he does. He's sending a message, and yet no word has been spoken to this point. So the son finally begins his speech. Father, I have sinned against heaven. I realize I've been wrong in God's eyes, but also I've sinned against you. I hurt you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. And in some sense, that's true. It's accurate. He isn't really worthy to be called his son. He's acted in such a way that that door should be closed. But he doesn't get a chance to get the rest of the speech out. That's as far as he gets. Before he can ask to be treated as one of the servants, the father interrupts and he calls to his servants and he says, quick, bring the best robe, put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet, prepare the fattened calf and celebrate. What's he saying? When he says, bring the best robe would have been the father's robe. So he's actually saying, get my robe and put it on him. There could be no clearer sign of acceptance to everyone. This guy's wearing the father's robe. He must be accepted. Get a ring and put it on his finger. Rings were often signs of authority. They were often used to put a stamp or a seal on things to show that you belong to the family. Another statement of you belong here. Sandals on your feet. Servants didn't wear sandals. And the son certainly didn't have them after all that he'd been through. Yet dad says, get sandals, put them on his feet. I don't want him for a minute to feel or think he's a servant. He's my son. And I welcome him home. Such a clear message. In fact, Jesus says these words that the father utters, for this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And that is something to celebrate. He's come home, not just to the place. He did come home to the residence and he was hoping that he might be able to live there. He's come home, not just to the place, but to the relationship. All because there was a father who was waiting for him. And don't miss this. Don't miss this. Please hear this part. In this story, Jesus reveals something amazing about God's heart. He is about restoring relationships. He is about welcoming us home. Now, I don't know about you, but as I hear this story, there's a part of me, it seems unfair. It seems like the father's being overly gracious. I mean, come on, doesn't he at least get the chance to get the lecture in? It seems like the son should be punished, right? I mean, come on, we've got to feel this. And by the way, if we do feel that, it's a common reaction. If you want to read this story on your own, that's exactly how the older brother reacts when he hears there's a party going on for a younger brother who's come home. So we are not alone in that. And yet it shows that the heart of God is a heart of grace. He's willing to accept us if we will come back and admit that we've been wrong. Don't miss the father's heart. What he wants for us is to come home, to renew a relationship that was broken, not by him, but by us, by our selfishness, our ingratitude, our greed, our disrespect. We've got to own that. But when we do, and we set our sights on going home, we go towards a heavenly father who is ready to receive us. And that's why Jesus came. to make a way for us to be restored to our relationship with God, because that's his heart. And so the question is, if you've wandered away, are you ready to come home? Will you? What God most wants is a restored relationship with you. That's what he wants, and that's really what Christmas is all about. Jesus came so that we could have that restored relationship. He wants us to come back home, to experience a relationship with the Heavenly Father who loves us more than we can imagine and is always ready to welcome us back. And we often hear in our society, you can't go home again. And I understand what that means. When you grow up and leave home and then you go back, it's never going to be exactly the same. But just know that with God, you can. He invites you to come back to him. When we recognize our wrong and demonstrate humility and brokenness, he is ready and willing to forgive and to restore. So how do we get there? How do we get home as a residence and a relationship with God? Thankfully, Jesus provides the answer for us. He was preparing to head to the cross that he knew was coming. He was meeting with his closest friends and preparing them for what was about to happen. He tells them he's about to die, that one of them, in fact, will betray him. They are confused, understandably frightened, and certainly hurt. But then he says this. John records his words, "Do not let your hearts be troubled. Don't be anxious. Don't be afraid. You believe in God, believe also in me. Trust me," Jesus says. "My Father's house has many rooms. My Father's home has much space. There's room for you. If that were not so, would I have told you that I'm going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am." Why? Because God is not just about a residence. He's also about relationship. He wants us to be with him. "You know the way to the place where I'm going." Jesus talks about leaving. He knows his work on earth is about to be completed. The next day, he will be hanging from a Roman cross, accused of crimes he did not commit. They didn't understand it fully at the time, but it would be through his death and resurrection that the price of forgiveness would be paid and that death would be defeated. But he doesn't want them to be anxious or afraid. He wants them to trust him. He wants them to know he will be preparing a place, a home for them. And he argues, "Why would I tell you that if I wasn't going to follow through? You know I will do that." And remember, a home is a place. It's a residence and a relationship. And that's what Jesus is preparing. That's what God wants for us. Thomas, one of Jesus' friends, speaks up, "Lord, we don't know where you're going. How can we know the way? How do we get there?" That's a question so many are asking today. How do we get home? How do we get to a relationship with God? How do we know that heaven is our final destination? And many answers have been provided. And maybe you've heard some of these. Maybe you've been told you have to be good. You have to do the right things and avoid the wrong things. And that's a wonderful thing to do. The problem is we can't be good enough. We can't be good enough. Maybe you've been told you have to be religious. You have to follow the rules of the system, whatever the system is. As long as you follow them the best that you can, God will see your effort. He'll grade on the curve and you'll be okay. It sounds good, but it's just not what the scriptures teach. It's not what God himself tells us about how it works. It's interesting to note that the son in the story that Jesus told didn't do any of those things before being restored to his father. He simply admitted he was wrong and went home. The criminal being crucified next to Jesus didn't have a chance to do any of these things when he asked Jesus for mercy. Yet Jesus assured him he would be in paradise with him. He would be home. So what is the way? Listen to how Jesus answers the question. And our expected answer that Jesus would say is, "This is the way." I mean, it's good enough for the Mandalorian. It's good enough for Jesus, right? "This is the way." But seriously, that's what we would expect. You expect somebody who's guiding you somewhere. This is what you need to do. You need to go down this road, turn left here, turn right there. You'll be there, right? They direct you. They guide you. This is the way. But that's not what Jesus said. He didn't point to a way. He said this, "I am the way." That's a whole different category. "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father. No one gets home except through me. You got to come through me." That's a bold statement. I get it. But if it's true, it's one we better pay attention to. Jesus was making a claim that if you want to go home, if you want to have a residence with God in heaven, if you want to have a relationship with God that's restored, you've got to come through me. The way isn't about performance, but a person. It's not about a method, but a mediator. Jesus came to bridge the gap between us and God. And it's not about your or my goodness, but it's about God's grace. His undeserved favor expressed to us through Jesus. The way home is through Jesus. Remember, home is both residence and relationship. And that's what God wants for you. And there is no other way to experience God's undeserved favor, a renewed relationship with God, and a perfect place with God than through Jesus. And that is the message of Christmas. Jesus left his home to make his home with us, so that we can be at home with him. Because that is the heart of God. Would you pray with me? Bow your heads. Maybe tonight is your night. Maybe you've been hearing what's been said and through the songs and the words that have been said here tonight. And you realize, like all of us, you have gone away from God. The good news is he is ready to welcome you home. He has open arms. All it takes is for you to admit that you were wrong and to turn back to him and ask for his grace and forgiveness, and he will freely give it to you. Not because you earn it, but because of what Jesus accomplished for you on the cross in paying the debt of your sin so that you could be forgiven. That's the good news that stands behind the story of Christmas. That's why Jesus came. So if that's you tonight, I would encourage you to simply express your trust in Jesus. It's not about the words that you say. It's about the decision of your heart and mind. Say, Jesus, I trust you. I trust that you are the way. And I want a renewed relationship with God. And I want to know that my final destination is a residence in heaven with you. And we are willing to humble ourselves, admit that we're the ones who've been wrong, and ask for only what he can provide. He gladly provides that for us, and he will do it for you. We at Davisville are just a community of people. We're kind of like a home away from home, right? That's what we strive to be, just sharing Christ's love and light to those that are around us. And if that's something that you're interested in, we'd love to have you check us out and see what we're all about. But enjoy your time with family and friends. Merry Christmas, everyone. Have a great night.